Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning into the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. Why don't we start this podcast off right with a 4th of July song from my dear sweet friend, the Teacup Pig.
This is to you, Katy Perry. I love you, girl. Everybody has a dream to one day be a firework. To rise up in the sky and explode into pieces everywhere. Feel the sizzle of the heat as your sketch flays away from your bones. And your eyes melt out of your sockets as you fall back. Yes, we one day will be fireworks. All we need is a dream, some gasoline, and a plane. Yes, we one day will be fireworks. Falling to the ground in an entertaining.
Trussell Family Hour podcast is brought to you by Shore Design T-shirts. Here's an interesting trivia fact that many people don't know. Did you know that the reason John Denver crashed his plane into the ocean is because he was wearing a Shore Design T-shirt? That's right. The master folk musician, the sweet singer of the wind himself, John Denver, had just put on a soft Shore Design T-shirt, climbed into his experimental plane, and just as he hit 2,000 feet, fell into a sweet, soft slumber. And while he was asleep, his plane crashed into the sea and drifted down into the coral reefs below, where they say that starfish were found chewing on his body, sucking his flesh away and transforming it into caloric energy that they could then use to look so beautiful there on the ocean floor. ShoreDesignT-shirts.com. They killed John Denver, sure, but it was worth it. What a wonderful death. Nothing could feel better than falling from the sky if you're John Denver and if you're wearing these shirts that are made of the softest fabric that any human has ever felt or experienced. The Shore Design T-shirt fabric has been described by President Barack Obama as feeling nearly as soft as the inner folds of the throat of prisoners in Guantanamo Bay who are being force-fed as they desperately try to kill themselves to escape the miserable and eternal hell that they've been placed within illegally by President Obama. And from time to time, he likes to take a little trip over there and shove whole apples into the throats of these prisoners. And according to President Obama, as his fist shoves down past their tonsils and gets that apple down into their stomach, the feeling of their esophagus, of their tonsils, of their tongue is so very soft that the only thing that our sweet president can compare that feeling to is the feeling of a Sure Design t-shirt. And the way that thing feels is it rubs against your body as you go jogging or go to yoga or take your tap dancing classes here in this wonderful country where we are having such a wonderful 4th of July. Sure Design t-shirts, why not go to suredesignt-shirts.com, check out these awesome designs, and order a shirt. Also, another easy way for you to support the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast is the next time you're buying something through Amazon.com, go to DuncanTrussell.com first and go through our Amazon portal. All you have to do is click on the Amazon portal, buy whatever it is that you are going to buy, and Amazon will give us a small percentage. It costs you nothing. It's a great way to donate to the podcast. You can also go to our shop. We have really cool t-shirts, posters, and stickers there that you could check out. And we're also sponsored by Audible.com. Audible is this amazing distributor of audiobooks. I am a member of Audible.com, and every month I get, I can't remember how many credits, 2 or 3 credits, which I can use towards an audiobook. I just used one of these credits to download The Stand, which is a book that I've already read, but I'm taking a long trip up to San Francisco tomorrow, and I want to listen to an audiobook during that trip. It's 45 hours long. That's more than enough hours to drown out this entire 4th of July. Go to audibletrial.com/family hour. You could sign up. If you don't like Audible, you can cancel your membership and you still get to keep the audiobook. So go do that. And for all of you who have been donating to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, thank you so much. To those of you who have sent us stuff to the P.O. Box, I'm sorry. My P.O. Box got shut down. I have been very busy, and I haven't had time to reopen the P.O. Box. I'm going to do that soon. I apologize for the inconvenience. Thank you for sending me stuff. I need to take the P.O. Box temporarily off the website, I guess. I'm sorry about that inconvenience. Okay, today's guest is a legendary comic. He performs internationally. He's probably performed in every country all over the planet. He's also been on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. He's had his own show on NBC. He's had his own show on Comedy Central. And he has a podcast called Tom Rhodes Radio. You can check him out at tomrhodes.net. And if he is coming to your country or your town, you should definitely go see him perform stand-up. So everybody, please, open your hearts, your minds, your souls, and spray your 4th of July level tantric energy all over the chest and stomach of this wonderful comedian, my friend, Tom Rhodes. Here we are.
You gonna turn off the AC?
Oh yeah, let me turn that off. Sorry. Sorry, man. I gotta get a chill in here, though. I already did the. I do the intro before, so the intro already happened.
Hey, there's not the buzzing sound of an air conditioner.
No, it's gone. Isn't that amazing, though? You could just roll in a rectangular-shaped thing in cool air.
And that's good, because like with the heaters that people have in winter, like people die all the time from those.
You mean from setting their houses on fire?
Right, or like, I don't know, some poor quality ones put out some kind of odor, gas
thing
that asphyxiates the whole family.
Don't you think that's an interesting thing about mass producing any item is that when you, no matter what it is, like people who make baby toys, they know when somebody comes up with some new rattle, they know, oh, this is going to kill 15 kids.
Right. And McDonald's small pieces in the Happy Meals, they choke to death a lot of kids.
Yeah. That's an, like when you produce something at the enough of something, it will kill.
Well, and you know, like China, they don't give a shit. What was that? The baby milk had like lead paint in it and shit, yeah, like 2 years ago.
Oh, they don't care.
They don't give a fuck.
They don't give a fuck.
You know, if you'll buy this air conditioner for $120, you know.
I mean, think about stand-up is totally different. Stand-up comedy is like one thing that it does. It's not really going to kill somebody. Like when you put out a comedy album, that's not on your mind. Like, oh yeah, this is a couple of kids are going to choke on some of these jokes and die in front of their parents. Their parents are going to walk into their and see in the crib this blue bloated thing with one of Tom Rhodes' jokes, his earbuds.
Well, that's why I make my CDs a certain size, so they're too big for a toddler's throat.
You know what's really sad though, man? If like one of your jokes, just for whatever reason, you just hit the right resonance or with a combination of sounds, disrupted the neurology of toddlers and killed children, your CD, the sales would probably go up.
Right. Like when there were suicides from metal bands and things like that.
Yeah. That's like a when that's the other side of things is that people want, like with music and art, if it kills people, it becomes more desirable.
Incredible. And throughout history, you know, book sales and music. Remember, it was like you're probably too young to remember, but it was like in the 80s where the devil was in rock music, and now it's like God with terrorism and all this real life nasty shit people have to deal with, like life and government.
Yeah,
it's like God, I wish the old days when all we had to worry about was that the devil was in rock music and some kid played a record backwards and killed himself. And oh my God.
Yeah.
It's only two teenagers in the entire country, but we got to have a big awareness program now of the devil.
Oh, I remember that, man. That was a joy. Did you ever believe in the devil when that stuff happened? Did you believe?
I was like, you know, I'm from a town. I grew up in outside of Orlando, Florida, a little town called Oviedo. Hello, people.
Oviedo.
You know, in really religious, you know, area, I always loved, like, AC/DC and the whole, you know, Highway to Hell. That, you know, song used to upset people. I went to Bon Scott's grave. And
wow.
I did the Perth Comedy Festival 2 years ago. And he's from Fremantle, which is the Oviedo of Perth. And I went to his grave and put flowers on it. Because, like, he helped me get through the eighth grade, ninth grade, without killing anybody.
Wow.
You know, when you're like, oh, you're a freshman and whatever, and, you know, just life is confusing. And I had an altercation with this kid at a baseball practice. Couldn't take a joke. I'm behind him. We're doing the warm-up things.
Yeah.
And I sneezed on my right hand. And with my left hand, I wiped it on his back. And then he just turned around and punched me right in the nose. And then it was like this big ordeal, and then like I was supposed to fight the kid, like whatever, the next day after school, and this big showdown, and everybody's waiting for it, and you know, I just went home and listened to Powridge.
Did you fight him?
No, I went home and sat in my room and listened to AC/DC, because I mean, like, I wanted to do more than fight him. I wanted to, you know, set fire to his family home and kill his entire family. I was pissed.
Right.
You know, I mean, I was being goofy with the joke, but like, this kid was just a dick.
Yeah, you know,
and he was in the Christian Athletes Association, and they were like against the devil and rock music. They would have the meetings, you know, reading rock lyrics and things like that, like Highway to Hell, and you know. So I really, really appreciate Bon Scott, and I put flowers on his grave. So if I don't know, I mean, he was friends with the devil.
Do you think? But do you think now? Do you think how much of that
the devil owned every booger in Bon Scott's north nose?
How much of that's theatrics, do you think? Like, how much did he believe?
100%. I think, you know, they probably, I mean, they were just, you know, piss takers, as they say in Australia.
Yeah.
I think they got, you know, they got a kick out of upsetting their local people.
Sure.
And I think that's, I mean, now it's child's play, you know, especially when, like, you know, gangster rap and, you know, fucking kill police and shit like that. But, you know, back then that was really cute.
But don't you think even gangster rap and kill the police is kind of child's play, really? I mean,
Now, like I'm saying, I mean, you got
right.
You got that guy in London, and he chopped off the British soldier's head in the street. And dude standing there talking casually with the meat cleaver in his hand. And to the PS, get your phone out, you know, like letting people film him and with their phones and like saying, what? And he's standing there, he's got blood all over his hands. Like, what fucking deranged person could cut off another human being's head?
Well, yeah, that's where we start moving out of the land of child's play and into the realm of, like, you know, memorable action. But even that, when you consider what's really happening is still, that's kind of almost like a pathetic revolution attempt of somebody trying to do something revolutionary because he's so overwrought when he looks out at, like, the crazy shit that's going on, you know, which
just, is people doing heinous shit in the name of religion. It's just like, I mean, why hasn't humanity grown up and evolved past this where there's enough reasonable thinkers in the world that would go, okay, stop, you know, this.
Yes.
Let's address this fucking ignorant issue of, you know, your God wants you to kill fucking infidels.
Well, yeah, and then you get then you have that, and of course, you know, the number of deaths from religious violence is now, I think, in the last 5 years, you could just show, okay, well, how many deaths are caused by nationalism and how many deaths are caused by religion. And I think that nationalism was really beating religion. Like, it was way ahead for a while.
Oh, hundreds of years.
Yeah, it's doing much better in the game, right? But
you have a chart in your kitchen.
It's a game. Like, it's one of the
some families have the little growth chart, you know, written in pencil.
Yeah, but you know what they both have in common is that they both use human sacrifice to achieve their goals, and that
to make their point. I guess, you know, like, look at those ruthless drug dealers in the north of Mexico last year. They pulled up in some town that was, they were having issues, and some people were trying to do the right thing, or I don't know exactly what, but they pulled up in, like, two pickup trucks with all these, like, 20 or 30 bodies with decapitated heads, and just started, they threw them out on the road.
Yeah.
Just to, you know, make their point.
Yeah,
sorry, I'm hitting the peas so hard. You need a pee screen.
I need a pee screen. That sounds like some kind of thing to, like, you use with dominatrixes to, like, to maximize the amount of piss that comes out of them.
I'm going to grab my pee screen.
Do you mind if I get my pee screen? It, like, slows down.
I'll pay you an extra 50.
Oh, I brought a pee screen. I'm a professional. Pee screen. The concept of death is one of the final taboos available to us. That's, like, the last thing that we can't figure out. And so it's we're still terrified of death. That's, like, the final last fear is death. Everyone's just fucking scared of death. And so that's, like, the worst thing you can do to someone is kill them. And that's, like, the worst thing that can happen to you is you die. Like, I was just at this, for this thing I'm shooting with Rogan for Sci-Fi, we went to a conference of scientists and neurologists who are trying to, it's called the GF 2045. And it's these scientists, these reputable scientists are trying to extend the human lifespan. Cause right now every year the human lifespan increases, according to this one guy from Princeton that we interviewed, the human lifespan increases every year by, something like a quarter of a year. So every year the lifespan increases by a quarter of a year. And their goal is to make it so that every year the human lifespan increases by a year. Because then you have immortality, and that's what they're working on, is trying to achieve human immortality. They're in a desperate struggle against death. They're trying to eliminate the parts of our genetics that cause us to age, and they think that it's very likely, very, very, very likely that within the next 100 years, something akin to human immortality will be achieved, because they're afraid of death, you know. That's, like, the big fear.
Shit, I smoke cigarettes. I'm never going to make it.
You don't know. No, man. That's the crazy thing, Tom. Yeah, I mean, you're smoking cigarettes is, that's why none of these people smoke, and they all eat shitloads of vitamins.
Right. Because raw foods. And
yeah, because they're trying to get to that point. But, you know, already with cancer medication and stuff, the new kind of medication they have that just targets, you know, just strands of DNA instead of like chemo bombarding all of your.
But still, they can't discount or ever eradicate human stupidity. I just want to say P again. What was that? Philadelphia.
Philadelphia.
Philadelphia. That forklift operator guy, the big crane shovel scooper thingy, the guy knocked over some building.
Yes.
And no one was hurt. But I mean, there's a lot of dumb people working big, heavy equipment.
Here's where it gets spooky, man. They, because that was one of the questions we asked. I'm not spilling the beans too much on this show because I'm supposed to keep it kind of secret or not talk about the details. But this,
why not reward the listener?
Yeah, no shit. I mean, the show. This is one little piece.
That's something else they got to look up. Sure, you don't think these listeners are busy enough?
Yeah, right.
In
no
their
kidding.
Day, yeah. Fucking give me a link. Just no, tell me.
Don't tell.
I don't want to fucking have to. Do something else. I'm already doing something else. I'm listening to your show.
No one's going to fuck it. Yeah, exactly. Not like I'm going to get busted for talking about
now
this.
Now I got to go to YouTube.
One of the questions we asked a scientist was that it was like, well, okay, great. So we extend the human lifespan. It doesn't keep people from walking in front of cars. It doesn't keep people from getting into accidents. And this guy said, no. Actually, genetics are so responsible for intelligence. And people who get into accidents, you know, people get run over, people get into car accidents, they're not dumb, but they might not be, you know, they might not be smart enough to know not to drive after 7 beers.
So we're just going to just thin out the gene pool, and then they're going to have automated, they're already working on cars you don't have to drive.
Yes.
You can, you know, maybe just be magic cars you link up to a system and just...
Well, that's based on the idea that we still have to travel.
I picture a lot of bright sweaters in this future.
Yeah, no shit.
Maybe bow ties will be all the rage. I'm glad I'm going to miss it.
Here's the problem. The
most boring fucking people with no stories. They didn't drink. They didn't smoke.
Oh, no, man. These people weren't boring at this conference. These people were fucking weird. Boring is really? Not the right word. There was a cyborg.
Hail bop weird?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, man. Like, this is a... these people, there was a curious heaviness at this place. And it's like... Because what's happening is... basically, what's happening is technology is beginning to be recognized as a life form. Technology, as they say, is like this set. Like, I don't know how many kingdoms there are. I think there's 6 kingdoms or something. 8. I don't know how many kingdoms of life there are, but they're saying technology is soon to be added into a new kingdom of life, and that technology is growing out of humans. Humans are the, like, when you see that weird fungus that drops on ants and causes, like, the ant to climb up a tree where then it explodes with all this, like, fungal shit that rains down on the other ants. Well, that's what technology has done with humans. It's infested our consciousness and is driving us towards this point where we actually usher in or, like, the midwives of this technological being, which is going to be the computer that we wake up through full brain emulation. We're giving birth to this thing, like Rosemary's Baby, where they make her wear the funny fucking necklace. And smell, this is pungent. That's a terrible impression. But you know what I mean? We're the midwives of the apocalypse. We're growing the Antichrist. We're lit. And let me tell you, man, this is what's fucking weird about this.
Because our movies just got too boring. We had to fucking amp up real life, Jack.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
It's Hollywood's fault. They'd have put out some more entertaining shit. We wouldn't have had to do this.
Let me tell you, man, when you go to a conference of geniuses there and you see dudes in robes walking by because they have archbishops hanging out there and stuff, something about the combination of trying to bring the dead to life, make humans immortal, and robes, when those things mix, when you see the crossing of those things, you're like, oh, wizards again.
Anytime the robes come out, you know, there's going to be trouble.
Yes. And whenever there's robes.
So there's like, it's like some like cult thing? It's
not a fucking cult. It's real.
Right.
This shit's real. It's a cult. And
if you get robes, it's a cult.
Well, that's what Dmitry Ishkov, the Russian billionaire who threw this fucking conference, he, as part of his thing. He wants to bring people from mystical traditions in to try to figure out a way to mix in, to not just let religion get totally, you know, curbed on the...
Maybe the new religion will have some, like, robot instead of Christ, you know?
Yeah, hey, I got an idea. How about a little less robes and a lot more robots, motherfuckers?
More robots, motherfucker. Yeah, I mean, so whether you think they'll just mutate us into... We'll just be wired completely?
Well, no, it's the idea is, like, what's happening is... So here we are, right? You don't have any control of your body. You're just born into this fucking body, and your genetics and your place of origin and your parents will sort of determine how you're going to turn out. So it's not like when you're playing a video game and you pick your avatar and you make it this or that and the hair color. And then it's so what's happening is what technology is doing is it's increasingly accelerating our ability to manipulate matter, to manipulate reality. And we are matter. We're made of matter. And so as part of this, what it's doing is it's not just allowing us to transform the external world, but the idea is to allow it to transform the internal world. Subjectively, use things called neural prosthetics.
Wow.
That you implant in the hippocampus that makes it so that the... Because the way memories work is they go into your hippocampus, and they then go into this, I don't know which part of your brain. And then so it's short-term memories, hippocampus. Those process into the long-term memories. So you put a neural prosthetic into your hippocampus. Now you're recording all your memories. So now you have all your memories permanently recorded, which means that you could theoretically, upon your expiration, reconstruct your past and allow other people to experience time from your perspective from the moment you got that implant in. Wow. So there's one of the things. And then if you have enough people have a neural prosthetic in their hippocampus, and let's say you have a large enough swath of the population, like the number of people who have cell phones now have these neural prosthetics, then you take all those different memories and you can assemble them into an accurate digital depiction of the past. And then that means that you could create a kind of digital time machine where people could put on some sort of...
And relive your life.
Relive other people's lives.
Wow.
So that's where we're plunging towards in an ever-accelerating rate. And that is why there is a funny heaviness about... At least to me, I found there to be a funny heaviness about the thing, because it's like... It's that classic hubris that human beings have, you know, where they're like, oh, no, we've got this. We've got this. We'll just bring this thing into existence. We'll do full brain emulation and we'll make it so that a machine wakes up and comes to consciousness of itself. It'll be fine. Everything else we've done has been fine. Why wouldn't this be fine? This will be fine. And just like that fucking ant that explodes with fungus, humanity will explode with a new sentient being that comes blasting out of all of our progress. And that is will be Jesus.
Finally.
Jeez. Well, that's the second coming.
Finally. That'd be great. No, other people aren't going to be the other characters? Or we're all going to be Jesus?
I don't know, man. Are you a spiritual person?
I used to be more. But I was just in Malaysia, and they have that ant that blows itself up to put gooey shit all over its enemy ants.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that it's a Muslim country.
Right.
The one ant that can blow himself up is from a Muslim country.
Yeah. Isn't that weird? The fuck? So what's in the air over there?
No, Malaysia is a lovely, lovely place.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it seems like a beautiful place. And that is an interesting thing that there's suicidal ants are there. That's a fascinating thing that people even do that shit, isn't it?
Yeah. So will you ask me, am I religious or spiritual? Or,
yes.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pro Jesus, but he's more just like a prophet, like Muhammad Ali, Bob Marley, Charles Bukowski, Evel Knievel.
Do you feel ashamed or scared to say that? Do you feel like it impinges upon, like it brings a kind of judgment?
No, I mean, I don't picture like a god old man in the sky with a beard. I think that the there's an eternal vibration of energy, and that when we're in our human suits, we're little droplets, and then when we die, we return to the spiritual ocean that is all one in the vibration of the planet, the energy.
So you, yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I believe in science. I mean, you know, I like the notion of miracles, and I like hero figures.
And
Jesus was a pimp.
Yeah.
And another guy I love is Caravaggio. He's one of my prophets. He was a painter in Italy. I'm just going to use P words this entire podcast.
Don't worry
and,
about it. Please.
Caravaggio painted 40 years before Rembrandt, and Rembrandt is heralded for his use of light. Caravaggio, his lighting was really dramatic, like movie scenes. And he depicted the Bible to be scenes from the Bible to be the criminal street thug acts that they were, like,
wow,
the John the Baptist, you know, the beheading of John the Baptist, and the, you know, just all this. And this guy was a hothead lunatic, and he killed a guy in a duel, and he just was constantly just drunk and fighting, and you know, but he was pro Jesus.
So you see, yeah, you see the Old Testament as this kind of like wild, gritty event that happened, sort of.
I think, I mean, you got to admit, they're entertaining stories, you know. King David was fucking everybody.
Right.
And whatever.
No, man, that's the thing. People don't recognize how psychedelic the New Testament is. And because and this is what I wanted to talk about in the beginning, as we were talking about the existence of Satan or the existence of some demonic force. And, you know, one thing that I like to do when I get really stoned is go to the televangelist channels and to watch the televangelists manipulate weak people late at night to try to send them money.
Right.
And the reason I like to watch that...
They all got expensive haircuts and clothes and glittering diamonds.
Yeah, yes. But that to me, is truly demonic.
Yes.
So that's why it's fun to watch, because when you see that, then you see, like, oh, holy shit. This is... I mean, fuck... You know, not fuck Marilyn Manson. Marilyn Manson's an interesting performance artist, and he's got some good songs. But that guy's not in league with the devil. He's too fucking honest.
Right.
When you see a man in a suit, late at night, rhythmically talking about these powerful stories in a way designed to hypnotize the elderly, the infirm, the sick, all the people that Jesus was telling you to heal, they're singing this song, this siren song, that has within its core a call to all of humanity to go out into the world and give yourself to help and give yourself to the point of death to help all those around you in the name of love. When you see the complete reversal of that thing using the thing itself.
Yeah. Well, Mark Twain said if Jesus were alive today, the last thing in the world he would be Christian.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And this is a thing that, like,
I like the notion of, you know, like Hindu, if you look this, monster characters are so fascinating.
Yeah.
The gods, it's like the original comic book.
Yes.
All these, you know, fascinating creatures and gods. And all the Hindu stories believe in the good versus evil. And if you're a good person or persevere and, you know, keep a good heart, you will always overcome evil. I mean, it's interesting. They believe in evil. And Charles Bukowski on this one reading, I forget which one, live at Redondo Beach or something, he told a poem about evil. And he said, I believe in evil. Because the evil can strike like eight ball in the side pocket, motherfucker. Pow. You know? So, I mean, you know, the duality of spiritualism. I don't know what the point was.
No, the point is that evil is when you talk about in Hinduism, you talk about the monsters that they create. There's more of an acknowledgement of this, you know, force in the universe and how this force in the universe is as much a part of the universe as anything else. You know, and that's the that's where you start getting the mind fuck of the story of Jesus, you know, because you have the story of Jesus that I remember going to this church. I can't remember which church, a famous church, and they have like 13 seats. No, 12 seats, and one's blanked out or something, because there were 13 apostles, the 13th being Judas, or that's where they place him as the 13th apostle. And they're like, that is for the betrayer who will not be named. And I was like,
wow.
You mean the creator of Christianity, the guy who fucking pressed the button on the whole goddamn thing? And that's where you get into the real like the backstage Christianity or the Gnostic Christianity, which is like, guys, if you're really going to look at this logically, you got to give Judas as much credit as Jesus.
Totally. So where was this church where it was tiny? There's only
no, it was
13,
a big cathedral.
And there's only 13 seats in them.
No, there were another 13. It was a display, kind of like a spiritual, a religious depiction. But it was like, I found it interesting because they're like, instead of being like, well, we should give a better seat for the betrayer because the betrayer created the
story,
the sacrifice.
Right.
The betrayer created... Judas was the lubricant that allowed Jesus to slide into history.
Right. He wouldn't be shit without him.
He wouldn't be
shit.
Yeah, and
Pontius Pilate.
Pontius Pilate was like, you know, a bit of a victim. Pontius Pilate was like just trying to get the hippie to say he's sorry. That's pretty much his whole function. Was like,
he was an old Southern judge then. He just wanted you to capitulate and apologize.
There's a feeling you get in the New Testament that when Pontius, for those of you who don't, a surprisingly large number of people will not even read the New Testament because of the giant shit that modern Christians have dumped onto the whole thing. So people won't even touch it. They're like, I just don't want anything to do with it. I don't want to be anything like that. In the same way, like, you know, where Maron's got a funny joke about Scientology where he's like, he's afraid to read any of the books because he knows at some point on some page he's going to be like, you know, this kind of makes sense. So Pontius Pilate, for those of you who don't know, Pontius Pilate was the Roman judge who tried Jesus, and Jesus was brought to the Roman judge by the Jews. Who wanted Tim dead because Jesus was going around saying we don't really need to follow these laws anymore. All you have to do is love God and you're going to be fine. And so
kill him.
Yeah, because it disrupted all of their religious power. It fucked up the priest class. The priest class hates that concept in the same way that the oil industry would hate free energy. It's the exact same thing. It ruins the power structure. So he was brought to Pontius Pilate, who you get the sense that he felt this effulgence coming off of this guy, or could see that it was a righteous person and didn't want to kill him, and kept saying to him, you know, what are you doing? What are you just there? They want to kill you. All you have to, I think he just needed him to like apologize. It was like basically an apology or a bow down to the priest class. Maybe just you've pissed off the Jews, man. You don't want to do that. They'll kill you. That's why he washes his hands. And then after he's like sentencing him to death, he tries everything. He like brings Jesus out in front of the mob and says to them, we will pardon one person. Who do we pardon? It was him and Barabbas, this murderer. And somehow the crowd was like, pardon Barabbas, not the fucking hippie. Barabbas.
Barabbas was a hoot. Maybe Barabbas was hilarious.
He had a great name for a comic, I guess.
Barabbas.
He sounds more like someone who'd run a comedy club.
That's going to be my Starbucks name from now on.
Barabbas? What's a Starbucks name?
We heard some Indian people telling us, some friends, I forget who we were talking to, who had, they had complicated Indian names. So when they go to Starbucks and they ask the name, they always say, like, Kim. You know, Sue, they all these ethnic people with really tricky names have a Starbucks name. So I'm going to start using Barabbas.
I love the idea of giving complicated then, Starbucks names.
The other one, what's the from Harry Potter, the name that can't be spoken?
Voldemort.
That's my Starbucks name. Voldemort.
You can't do Voldemort, man. You're going to seem like the biggest nerd on earth. You can't. That's a good idea. Because you look the opposite of a nerd, man. You're as close to Elvis as there is in stand-up comedy. You're such a charismatic dude, man. Whenever I get around you, I always think, like, this guy could start a fucking religion or a church. You just, like, radiate charisma, man.
I should. You reminded me when you're, because you said there's 13 seats, and I didn't picture a big cathedral. I pictured this small thing. I when I moved to San Francisco in the early 1990s, I lived in the Western Addition, right on Alamo Square Park, which at the time, now it's, you know, kind of gentrified and there's, you know, nice stuff. It was always a fabulous area, but it was a little bit of a rough area.
Yeah.
Especially on Divisadero, the big street. And it was there for years. Excuse me. It was the African Orthodox Church of St. John.
Whoa.
And it was the John Coltrane Church. It was some religious jazz guy or spiritual jazz guy from the neighborhood started this church based on the music of John Coltrane and Love Supreme. And so it was this tiny little storefront with these little pews, and there were instruments everywhere, like guitars and, you know, tambourines and, like, whatever, all kinds of stuff. And the whole, everyone was encouraged, and all they did was play jazz every Sunday afternoon. And I'm a stoner. I just moved to San Francisco, which was my hippie utopia.
Yeah.
You know, I just, you know, dreamed of moving there from Florida and, you know, finding enlightenment. And then, like, three blocks from my house is the John Coltrane Church. And man, what no better Sunday afternoon than, you know, to hit a couple of bowls, you know, and then just go over there and hang out for a couple of hours. And it was really beautiful. And the thing where everybody was encouraged to pick up an instrument is because we're all a part of the music.
Yes.
And we all make a contribution to the big fabric of the universal song. Isn't that beautiful?
That's beautiful.
And of course, they shut that place down.
<it's>, Get that fucking thing out of here.
It's making people happy and loving.
We can't have that.
We can't have this.
Get rid of that.
Nuisance.
This is, yeah, nuisance.
It moved to like Hunter's Point or some shit, which is like some, you know, housing project way outside of on the outskirts of the city. I don't even know if they still exist, but I mean, it was such a magical little place in the neighborhood.
Yeah, that's anybody could do that. Like, people could just start doing stuff like that all the time. It's not that hard. People have houses. There are ways to do things like that, but there's a sense of this invisible wall between the you that is the you now and the you that would be like, I'm gonna start a place where people play music together religiously. You know what I mean? Like, that barrier is such a fascinating barrier, the barrier that keeps people from
taking the leap.
Yeah, what is that barrier?
I don't know. I've never been afflicted with that.
You don't have that.
No, fuck. You know, moved to New York when I was 20, moved to San Francisco when I was like 22. I moved to Amsterdam, you know?
Yeah, you are.
I'm not afraid to.
You don't really even have an address, so to speak.
You're no, ready. I don't live anywhere. No, I get my mail sent somewhere. And to help me, you know, keep the, you know, credit cards paid and things. But no, I haven't lived anywhere for like 7 years now. I visited my storage unit today. I had to, we were in my annual trip. I have a storage unit here in Los Angeles. And we were in New Zealand in May. And it's getting close to winter. It's like autumn there. Now it's winter.
Ah.
And so we needed coats and stuff. And now it's summer here, so I had to, like, dump winter shit and things accumulated.
How did you avoid being a scared person in this incarnation?
Well, I guess from wanting to be a comedian. I mean, it's, you know, what more fearless act than to go on stage? And, like, when I started in Florida, you know, I mean, I wouldn't say they were drunk, but there were a lot of rowdy one-nighter rooms, you know?
Yeah.
There was like a particular tough biker bar in Daytona I used to do. And I'm a little nerdy high school kid, you know, starting comedy and just that. And moving to New York City when I was 20. I mean, I couldn't get many sets, but, you know, to move to New York City and think your shit is good enough.
Yes.
I think the courage to just start a new life and move somewhere.
Yes.
I've never had a problem with that. My favorite Doors lyric of all time is, I've never been so broke that I couldn't leave town. I'm a changeling. See me change.
Yeah, man, but this is a, you know, you have to understand that this is an affliction for a great many people in the world. Like, so many people are chained down to this life. They're chained down to some place. There's this...
My brother, army guy, tough Republican, right-wing guy to the core, and bully, used to beat me up all the time. His eternal lifelong brother advice to me has always been, suck it up, pussy.
Wow.
So, you know, if you're saying people are down and they're having problems, hey, suck it up, pussy. That's my brother's John's message to me and the rest of the world. Suck it up, pussy.
Yes. That's very wonderful.
We're starting my religion tonight, Duncan.
Yes.
You're
yes.
saying that, really. I think you and I, it's just going to be.
It's being born right now. But it is I like things like that. And it reminds me of the Zen stories, you know, like a lot of like, you know, Zen is just this simple thing, and it really doesn't get in, it doesn't want to do the whole complicated thing at all. So, you know, there's stories of like Zen masters just like smacking the shit out of their disciples just randomly, and somehow the effect of getting slapped by like an enlightened person shakes you free. You know, it shakes you.
Wow.
Yeah, it shakes you free. And it, like, is
that would be an awesome church where you just go there once in a while and they slap the shit out of you.
It. They have these.
All right, instead of like getting your communion wafer, you walk up to the front and the guy just fucking
wake up! Suck it up, pussy! Why are you even here?
Why aren't you out there making your life better? Why are you improving yourself for our...
get the fuck out of it. For what? Improving yourself for... I like the when you
alpha
say...
Alpha human, the neuron the paradise the, you're yeah. describing.
Well, you know, that is a thing that I think people you know, miss a lot, which is this is one of the paradoxes. Sometimes you run into somebody who's like really big on helping people, and you'll run into a helper, and yet, you know, your instincts, you get around a helper, somebody who's really into service work, and then you right away, the part of your the asshole identification thing is like, wah, 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 angry person, shitty person, miserable person, and it's like they skipped a step. They just went straight to the going to like serve soup instead of recognizing that they're a person that needs help too, and that they needed to work on themselves first, right. And that just going out there and putting soup in people's stomachs isn't gonna like fix you as much, you know. That's what I mean, like that this idea of like conquering, that when you conquer fear, you really do help shitloads of people. I mean, probably right now there's some people just from listening to you for 5 minutes. There's someone right now standing in front of his bed putting clothes in his suitcase. Just kidding.
People are on the go now.
Yeah, people are...
They got the okay from me.
They want...
It's okay. Yes.
Yes.
Should I do this? If that question is in your head, people, yes, I say it's okay.
What about the danger?
I don't know.
What about the OD? What about the pregnancy?
No,
what
I moved...
What about the kids?
Yeah, I mean,
what about the
I moved
job?
To New York when I was 20. It was the worst year of my life. And I had seen Jay Leno. He used to be a dangerous, opinionated comedian, believe it or not, in like the 80s.
Yeah.
And I was a teenager and I didn't have a ticket and I snuck in this back door and I listened through the curtain, and then he comes back. It turned out to be right where his dressing room was, where I snuck in, and I got to talk to him. And I said, do you have any advice for me as a comedian? And he said, oh, move to New York. Every comedian should be in New York or L.A. And so that's what got it in my head. I have to move to New York. And that was probably the worst year of my life.
Right.
When I was 20, I wasn't ready.
Yeah, but
so okay, unpack, start unpacking. Okay, put the suitcase back in the closet.
But isn't that? But yeah, just give up. Actually, give up. It might hurt you. But that's the thing. This is the thing that like
make a few test trips somewhere first.
Is that it?
Do, yeah, because like when I moved to San Francisco, I had I knew I wanted to move there, so I took like two or three trips. I invested in myself. And I went and stayed out on a friend's couch and checked out the city and hung out. And then the same thing many years later when I wanted to get in with London. I had a couple friends that lived there, and I stayed on their couch, invested in myself. And then I got in there. And then that led to all these other gigs all over Europe and then all over the world. So, you know, don't just leave in the middle of the night. You know, test something out first.
Yeah, be responsible. You don't have to go rushing off to into the land of destruction, but still it is like a to me, I don't know why I'm so obsessed with this topic, man, but I just find it so fascinating, the way that there is a glue trap in society that traps scared people, and they are the ones who end up running the machine, you know. And then within the machine, there's all these like free beings, these like wildlings like you that are like galloping through the machine, free as a bird, storage unit, no sense. That's not a for you. You don't, when you go to see your storage unit, there's not this feeling of like, this is bad. I'm in a bad place.
Oh my
right
God.
Now.
No, it's great. I like, wow. Ooh, hey, I got that in Peru. Oh shit. Wow, man. Look at that thing I bought in New Zealand. God, I love that.
But you
just look at it.
I would run into people when I was, I remember going to India, when I was in college, and running into people like you who were just travelers and wise, interesting people. And it was always like, you always feel like you're around a feral being. You're like, what the fuck? This is a thing that isn't, this thing is a wild thing. It's broken free of the thing that, if everyone broke free like you, what would society be like if everybody broke free like
you? Well, I mean, you'd realize how, you know, how much unbelievable beauty is all over the planet. There's just so much to see and so many wonderful beaches to you know, walk naked on, and with no one around in places, and just pristine heaven all over the world. And then, you know, the beauty of you know, like rice paddies in Bali, and I mean, like the terrace farming, and the terrace farming in Peru, and different beliefs. I was telling you about that religious ceremony for Pachamama that I saw in Peru, and that's they believed in Mother Earth because Mother Earth fed them. So I don't know how they did it. Like, do you think aliens helped them build Machu Picchu and the Nazca lines?
Yes,
you know about the Nazca lines.
Absolutely,
they think those were UFO landing strips.
But describe them for people who don't know.
They were not discovered. There's this half of Peru is desert. You think of the Amazon and Machu Picchu, but there's lots of it that is just desert. And there's this one flat area of the desert, and it wasn't discovered until aircraft was invented in like the 20s. Someone was flying over, and they saw these massive rock carvings. And it's actually rocks lined up. This is the way they did it. And they're carvings. One's a, you know, a condor. The other one looks like an astronaut. One,
yeah.
There's like 20 of them. There's a monkey. And then there's these, they think they were UFO landing strips.
Right.
And I flew it over it in a little tiny propeller plane. And it's totally UFO landing strips.
Yeah.
Totally.
Right.
There's this candelabra out on the coast that like perfectly that they drew into the side of the mountain. And if you line that up to the Nazca lines, that would have been like where the ship was coming in. Like, and then like 100 miles up the way is the Nazca line. So, but anyway, they have this terrace farming all over these mountains in Peru, and just they were all about, you know, the Incas were a reciprocal society, and they grew food and they shared it with people. And so, I was working for this after I had the late night talk show in Amsterdam, the same network let me do a travel program.
Yes,
and it did a highlight on Peru, and so. We went to Puno on Lake Titicaca and took a boat like 5 hours out into the water to this island, Lake Amentani Island. And yeah. You stay with a local family. There's no electricity on the island. They said bring fruit. These people go ape shit for fruit.
Wow.
And I brought a bag of oranges. You should have never seen this woman. Just watching this woman eat this orange was just fucking orgasmic heaven. Like, it was just the greatest piece of candy or something. It's just this woman that we get there, and she went straight for the oranges, ripped the bag open, and just fucking
wow,
and peeled it, and oh man, she was it was beautiful. And then the whole village, because we were filming, they said they do this Pachamama ritual, and that's this ritual to Mother Earth that. And it wasn't the right time of year for it, but they didn't want our cameras, our film, to miss it. So the whole village came out and they put it on for us like the next day, which, you know, wow. You always hear about Native Americans not wanting their film or their picture taken. Yeah. You heard that back in the old days or whatever.
Sure.
These people were like, no, we'll do our most sacred thing for you and, you know, set up the cameras. And so everybody gets in a circle and they got the guys, the shaman's got, you know, he's the smoking the place out with whatever incense. And then there's a little fire with like cow shit that's burning and they put all these coca leaves and everybody takes a coca leaf and everyone, you take the bag as it comes around and you say a prayer and you put your little, you know, coca leaf in it and everybody passes the bag around and then the shaman like holds it up, you know, and it's got everybody's leaf in it and then he puts it on the burning cow shit and and burns it. And I mean, it doesn't, it was so unbelievably beautiful.
Yeah.
And this, I'll never forget the guy, the sound man, standing there with the pole and the fuzzy microphone. And the guy sitting, his tears running down his face while we're filming it. It was just like one of those moments. Like, wow, this is this ancient ritual these people have done for thousands of years. These are the direct descendants of the Incas.
Possibly a ritual that was done in the presence of aliens who are landing on those strips.
Right.
Yeah, man. That's a, that. That experience is, how much money is that experience worth?
What something like
it's
that?
No cost? Fucking
yeah,
price.
Yeah, no price.
It's no price. There's no that kind of stuff is what you get when you travel and when you become nomadic and when you break free of the.
Well, that's why I was in Malaysia. I just got back from Singapore and Kuala Lumpur. And Jakarta, and this guy had to take my passport to go get the Malaysia work permit put in it. And as I'm handing it to him, I'm like, this is my most valuable possession.
Right.
You know?
Please be careful. Yeah. Are you now this, you're doing comedy in Malaysia?
Yeah, there's a great tour there. And the Malaysian comedy scene is really cool. It's a Muslim country, but it was a former English colony, so they all speak English. And, you know, it's where the Petronas Twin Towers are.
Okay.
Have you ever seen those? Very iconic image. And so you got Malay Muslims, Indian Hindus, and Chinese Christian or Buddhist. That's the ethnic populace. And that's their comedy scene. And there's they ruthlessly make fun of each other's religions.
Wow.
And each other's ethnicities and things. And I mean, there's this whole one Malaysia. They got this, you know, real united spirit, I think should be emulated by the rest of the world. But I think they're more free than we are because they like openly make fun of each other's beliefs. And I mean, I you know, I'm sure there's some government restriction, but I thought they were pretty free like that.
They're doing stand-up comedy?
Yeah, and you got brown, dark-skinned local people as the audience, and they're young, well-educated, well-heeled hipsters.
That is, see,
fantastic.
This is the thing, man. This is
Singapore. You're playing half to expatriates and then half Singaporeans, which is, you know, people from all over the world and also similar to the Malaysian ethnicity.
Do you find it weird performing for American audiences after going on?
No, not at all. I love it all. You know, it's a challenge to go. I mean, it's different playing in California than it is to, you know, Illinois or anywhere. And going to different countries. The challenge of, you know, what will work, you know, what you know will work, what you think is iffy, working it out on the fly. Right when you get there, and then also the observations that you gain about those places.
But you know any joke that you have that's a local joke from L.A. or
no, you can't do shit like that. That shit. That's when you find out what's universally funny and what regional shit you should cut if you want to do the worldwide circuit.
Right.
And the worldwide circuit's amazing, and that's why I don't live anywhere. There's too many fabulous gigs. And it's like always, I want to, you know, part of me wants to move to New Orleans. Another part of me wants to move to San Francisco. And, you know, my wife points out, you know, Los Angeles might be important. But I just keep booking gigs. There's too much great shit. There's too many great adventures to have. And then to be paid as a comedian. It took me so many years to get to this level. I'm not going to relinquish it easy. You know, I am going to squeeze just like that woman eating that fucking orange, man. That's the way I'm going to do the fucking life. I'm just going to fucking get the juice on my face. I'm going to fucking wipe it. I'm going to lick my fingers. I'm trying not to let a single drop be lost, you know? And then enjoy the sticky face afterwards. Just fucking devour it, man.
Yes. Mm. God damn it. I want to break a guitar.
Hey, can we take a break so I can have a...
Yeah, actually, you know what? We've almost done an hour. You know what? Let's go smoke a cigarette. I stopped smoking, but let's go outside and then we'll wrap it up. Exactly. That's better. So here's the question. I don't think we fully answered it. What would society look like if everyone were like you? If everyone was a traveler, everyone was moving freely through the world?
I think people would be a lot more chilled out. It'd be a little more relaxed. You know, like you think you got traffic problems in your town, you go to Jakarta, you know? Fucking kill yourself.
Who runs the factories? Who runs the airlines? Who runs the...
Yeah, I guess, you know, somebody's got to, you know, clean the pee dribbles off the toilet seat in the hotel.
Yes. Isn't that... Now? That,
I mean, yeah, okay, so maybe it's not possible.
Welcome to the Judas paradox, man. Here we are again. It's like, this is the big paradox, which is that for society to function... You need frightened people. For the world as we understand it to work, you need people who are terrified to step outside of where they're at, and you need people who are who are satisfied with being in one little area, not moving around. And there are people who are satisfied with that, and that's great. But for society to function as we know it, you need vast quantities of human suffering. And that is a confusing paradox to me, which I don't really know. What do you think about that?
I don't know. I mean, I picture China, and I've been there a bunch of times, and just the multitudes of people. There's too many people there, and then it's communism. They all need a job, so you'll have like there's certain town you go to, like Guangzhou or Suzhou, and you know there's like two guys on the elevator, you know, and that's their job, just to push the button. There's just so many people that need jobs, and
yeah,
there's just too many people there. Are they happy? They're going to take over the world. There was some comedian, I don't know who said it in England, that, you know, the picture of the future, we're all going to be living on the moon in a Chinese concentration camp.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, have your fun while before the whole shit house goes up in flames, as Jim Morrison said.
Do you think the shit house is going up in flames?
No, I think the earth is just going to shake us off one day. It's just tired of our bullshit. You know, I think the world probably will out evolve us.
The world will out evolve us in the sense that it will just like the environment may collapse, or you know what they're saying? They're saying in like 50 years, Miami's underwater.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Or just like shake half of us off with an earthquake and.
And you think that's something that's close?
No.
You're not
I don't know. I guess I don't have an answer for your question.
Maybe
that's what I should have said.
That's great. Yeah. Like, man, that's how you could always tell a smart person.
I'm just searching for an answer I don't have.
One way you can always tell a smart person is they will say, I don't know. Because somebody asked me, I remember the other day somebody asked me this question. And it was an unanswerable question about, I can't even remember what it was, man, but you would basically have to be God to answer this question.
Right.
Like, and they asked me this question, and man, like 4 minutes into my answer, as I'm just answering this question, I realized, like, what are you saying? You don't know. You don't know at all, you idiot. You're a moron to even, like, try to, like, it's good to say you don't know. I that's good, but I, you know, one thing I wanted to ask you, because you do have the perspective of someone who hasn't been localized in the United States. Do you get a read from people? What's your feeling on this new revelation that the NSA is recording every email, text, Skype conversation? And recently, Glenn Greenwald, the reporter who's working with Snowden, the leaker, as they call him, whistleblower is the right term for him, but is revealed that there's documents showing that they're also recording cell phone calls, which means somehow some incredible amount of cell phone calls are also being stored. What do you think about this?
Yeah, and they're obviously, it wasn't just limited to the United States. The French government and the German government is looking into maybe the United States violated their privacy issues and things. I think the rest of the world looks at it the way I look at it, in that it's shocking that no one really seems that upset about it.
Yes.
No one really gives a fuck.
Right.
People think, oh my God, well, terrorism, of course, we're at war. Just, yeah, it's necessary. But it's unbelievable. It's frightening. They raised bus fares in Peru. People fucking rioted in the street. They raised the bus fare like 25 cents, something yes. like that. These people are so poor, don't have anything. And they, you know, that makes such a difference in their lives, 25 cents. They fucking are rioting.
Yeah.
And they overturned the bus thing. What would it take to get Americans fucking in the street and shaking their fist at the man and protesting? I mean, like, nobody gives a fuck. Back to just continue your sleepy little life.
Yeah. Sleepy little life. And that is I think that when you... events like this happen, you do see the depth of the conditioning here in the United States, because if we're not reacting to that in any kind of strong way outside of, I mean, I've fired off a couple of angry tweets.
Well, when you think about that guy Snowden too, I mean, for this guy to just go, fuck you, where like he can never come back to the States. This guy, where can he go? He's trying to get to Ecuador.
He's in a Russian airport.
Yeah, you know, right now. Yeah, you know what Russian airports are like? Just fucking vomitous, just horrendous. Peru, Ecuador is next to Peru. I love Peru. I don't know if I'd want to live there. And Ecuador is a really tiny little country.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, what this to do that, take that risk, and reveal this, then for people not to give a fuck. I mean. It's mystifying.
It's beyond. It's look, man. It's fucking beyond mystifying. It's like this is clearly our society is clearly a brainwashed society. Our news is state sponsored news. When you see these reporters talking about Snowden and calling him all the accusing him of all these weird things, he wants to be famous is one of the things they said. Come on, like I was watching this fucking. Can't remember his name, and usually I like his interviews. It's that British guy who's against guns. What's his name?
Piers Morgan.
Piers Morgan. He's interviewing him, and he's like, he's got Dr. Drew on, and he's asking Dr. Drew, like, but isn't that a part of him that just longs for fame? And Dr. Drew's like, there could be that part, but it's like Glenn Greenwald, who's been working with this guy, did this amazing, I'll email it to you, he gave this amazing fucking speech, talking about his experience with working with this guy, and he pointed out he could have sold these documents to a variety of different countries
right.
for millions and millions and millions of dollars. He could have made so much money if he wanted to be a spy. He could have made so much money with this shit, but he didn't. He's told Greenwald that he had to do it.
Thought he was doing the right thing.
He has to do it.
I think the biggest issue here is, you know, Snowden apparently only had like a GED education. Yeah. And he worked for like a branch something, some branch company that did things for whatever, the CIA or the whatever, the NSA. And that's how he had access to all these all this sensitive stuff, secrets. And then Bradley Manning, who, you know, the WikiLeaks, all those secrets that this guy, you know, got. He was a weird private.
Yeah.
A private soldier.
Yes.
Rank. And confused about his sexuality. I think the biggest issue here is the American government, why do they let these people of lower whatever... look at the morons that they are letting have access to everything yeah. important. Yeah. If it was that important, why didn't you fucking hire somebody
sure.
a little more intelligent and a little more, sleazy? I don't know. I mean, I think the biggest issue is just the American government shouldn't like be trying to extradite this guy. They should just come out and go, well, sorry, we're just so fucking inept that we just leave all of our secrets yeah. out for anybody to Bradley Manning, all the secrets he got He had discs, and he would label them Lady Gaga. And so when, like, sensitive stuff would come up on the computer, he'd slap in the disc and download it. That's how he collected all this stuff. And, you know, any soldier walking by his desk would have looked down and saw the, you know, the Lady Gaga fucking discs. And what are you fucking pansy?
Idiot.
Jesus, Lady Gaga.
Terrible.
Nobody is going to question a Lady Gaga fucking disc on a guy's desk.
No.
But, I mean, I think that's it. I mean, the ineptitude of our government, my wife and I were having a conversation about the Guantanamo Bay people being tortured.
Yeah.
And I was like, I wonder what the top 10 torture songs were. And so we Google it, you know, on the iPhone, we got it, you know, the information in 5 seconds answer to our question. Number one was Fuck Your God by this satanic death
metal band. Hold on.
Deicide.
Wait, you're saying they play this shit?
Yeah, loudly when they're torturing the people, right? And then, so that song makes sense. That was the number one song. But, like, the other choices were, like, Don McLean's American Pie and, like, Queen's We Are the Champions, which that Brian May guitar riff, I could listen to that all day. So, I mean, like, our government is so lame, they can't even choose good torture songs. And then, like, we can't even hire the people that would protect our country's fucking secrets.
Imagine this. Somehow, in some alternate dimension, China invades the United States because some crazy commie hater in the United States figures out a way to hijack a Chinese airline and fly it into one of their buildings. Some super religious fundamentalist psychotic freak figures out a way to just do this insane terrorist attack on China. And so China's like, no, fuck you. We're invading. We're coming over. We're getting our pound of flesh. They attack you after a few months or years of watching you'd get a call. You'd get a call maybe. You know, hey, dude, did you hear about Stano? What? Yeah, man, he got fucking blown up. Like, a drone hit him. He's dead. He got blown up by a fucking Chinese drone. You're like, what? What are you fucking talking about? And then you, like, hear about how your aunt got blown up or your friends got blown up. And then at some point you're like, you know what? Fuck this. I'm going to fight the Chinese who've invaded my country. I didn't have anything to do with flying planes in their goddamn building, but I'm going to try to take out a few. They're probably going to kill me, but it's going to be worth it because they killed some of my best friends. So you go out there and you start fighting. You're just a fucking comic. You don't know how to handle a gun. You get arrested within 2 days, thrown on a boat or a ship, a cargo plane. The next thing you know, you're in fucking China.
Wow.
On an island
making
in China.
Things.
Chained to a fucking chair, and they're playing Chinese pop songs to you. You don't even know. You don't even know you don't speak Chinese. It's just some weird Chinese guy blaring shit music into your ears, and you're there indefinitely. That's what we've done. That's what we've done as a country. And it's like, I know I love to think of it as inept, and I love to think, oh, it's just an inept, bumbling demon. But I don't think it's that inept, man. I think it's getting smarter and smarter, and every time information gets leaked and they're sitting there waiting for the streets to fill with rampaging, angry Americans who are like, you can't monitor us, and it's just quiet. People are going to work. They're like, oh, great.
Nobody's going to care because the Chinese are always going to give us fireworks.
Yeah, they're fine. They're fine. We could do anything to these motherfuckers.
Yeah, just keep giving them good video games.
Yeah, keep That's putting out those video about. Games, those mega fucking hits. Anyway, it's a little spooky, and you're going to do you think sometimes that you're going to be in the Philippines or in some country?
I'll be in China later this year.
Do you ever feel like you'll be out of the country if shit fell apart here, probably. Odds are you wouldn't even be here when shit fell apart.
I would hope. There was some famous book that was made into a movie in the 50s. I forget the name of it. But, like, there's a nuclear holocaust and only Australia survives.
Yes.
And it's paradise and, you know, beautiful beaches. And, you know, hopefully I would be in Australia when the shit goes down.
But you don't.
Or New Zealand.
You're a positive guy. I'm sorry for Tate's.
I know.
Turning
Debbie
this thing.
Downer.
I didn't mean to drive the fucking thing into a pot.
No, I love your mind, Duncan.
Thanks,
Tom. I man, it's it's always such a good ride when you know, we get together.
But I've got to start listening to your podcast, man. Hearing that it's
Tom
really
Rhodes
fun.
Radio,
I,
baby.
Yeah,
and I did Kim.com when I was in New Zealand.
Yes, and when you told me, now can you, just for people who don't know, can you tell them who Kim.com is? Because most people know, but I'm sure some people have.
Kim.com started MegaUpload.com. Right at the beginning of the internet. Yeah. This guy was doing cool stuff. He started out as a hacker, really interesting story. And then, you know, AT&T hired him, these different corporations that he had hacked, so they could figure out, you know, how he knew to get in through these systems. And there was MegaUpload.com was this massive file sharing, so lots of movies were exchanged. And the way his site was set up, there was no search links. People just shared files, but just millions and millions of dollars were not given to the Hollywood, you know, movie studios, yeah, or whatever. So he's on the FBI most wanted list. The United States government is trying to extradite him from New Zealand. He's from Germany. Interesting guy. He lived on the top floor of the Hyatt in Hong Kong for like 5 years.
Wow.
He's got a wife and a few kids.
You went to the Kim.com.
I went to his mansion.
The mansion.
Yeah.
And is it really a mansion?
Unbelievable mansion. Yeah, and he's got his own private security force.
He has an army.
His own little private army.
Kim.com has an army.
I mean, sort of. I mean, a little security detail.
Because he's the number
most... chief security officer sat with us. I mean, he seemed like a decent guy. I mean, I think they were more old buddies or something. But I did, like, the NPR of New Zealand. And I guess it was the Terry Gross of New Zealand, yeah, or whatever. lovable lesbian speaking in hushed tones. And she asked me what I wanted to do while I was in New Zealand. And I said, though I know it sounds silly, but the one thing I'd really like to do is I'd like to meet Kim.com and interview him for my podcast. Because I think he's demonized in the United States.
Yes.
So he must have heard, or somebody heard. And he followed me on Twitter a couple hours later. I found his email through Twitter and sent him a lovely little message. And I got invited out to the mansion.
Jesus Christ. Now, are you worried that you are now affiliated or associated with someone who's the number one most wanted guy? Do you think this...
No. I mean, it's not like WikiLeaks Julian Assange giving out military secrets. I mean, what? A few copies of Sister Act 2 didn't get fucking... the proper $3.05 didn't go to somebody's fucking pocket who won't give me a job in Hollywood. You know, when the industry starts showing me a little more love, I'll start showing the industry a little bit more love. How about that, Hollywood? I'll make a deal with you right here on the Duncan Trussell Family Hour.
Give
okay?
Tom Rhodes.
No,
work.
I think the guy is really interesting. I think he manipulated the strengths of the tools he was working with when the internet started, and it's sort of no different than Dropbox in a way. And he didn't know what files are being shared. I mean, my wife did a brilliant job editing the... Because the FBI and the New Zealand Army raided his mansion last year. You may remember that.
Yep.
And so my wife edited the beginning of it. It starts off with these news clips and the actual helicopter going in.
Wow.
Them landing and raiding his mansion. And then there's a Steve Wozniak interview we found where he's actually Wozniak is defending Kim.com.
Well, Wozniak is a revolutionary hacker. He's a hilarious human who's like an anti-authority, and he hates authority, and he like is really into counterfeiting identification and money, and he's amazing. But he's in the same camp as Kim.com, which is this kind of new breed of techno-patriots who are...
Well, and you should listen to that episode, and it's really... And Kim.com lays it out, man. I mean, they're basically trying to colonize the internet.
Right.
Whereas now it's this open marketplace. It will become, and already is, the most powerful marketplace. It's this one world.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of money to be made in this marketplace,
yeah,
and they're trying to colonize
They're trying to control it.
Yeah.
Because there's that's what power does when it identifies new sources of energy.
But Kim.com lays it out, man, and he's a really smart guy, and he's funny, and he loves comedy. So I
can't wait to listen. I gotta listen. I should have listened to it already. Where is your podcast located?
It's everywhere. What? It's free on iTunes. It's on SoundCloud. For
what's your website?
My website is tomrhodes.net,
and that's where it's.
You can find it there, of course. Tomrhodesradio.com will be coming very soon, hopefully in the next month or so.
But a great web guy if you need one.
I do. I really do. But yeah, you can find it on Stitcher, on everything. So
beautiful. Okay, well, I'm gonna put a link to that. Up and where can you tell me where your dates are going to be coming up?
My dates are on tomrhodes.net.
Okay, great.
Tomrhodes.net is my
so go to tomrhodes.net, listen to his podcast, listen to the Kim.com interview. Thank you so much for doing this.
I love you, Duncan.
Love you too, man. Thank you.
Respect.
Okay, everybody, that was Tom Rhodes. Go to tomrhodes.net, and if you liked us, give us a rating on iTunes. Thank you so much for listening. Happy 4th of July. Be careful. Don't set yourself on fire with fireworks. Set yourself on fire with love. Or at least with something that won't permanently disfigure you. You're listening to The Changeling by The Doors from their album The Very Best of The Doors, available on iTunes. Hare Krishna.